This episode of FilmSack is brought to you by Audible.com. Go to audiblepodcast.com/FilmSack and get that free audiobook download today. This episode of FilmSack is brought to you by the all-new The Instance, The Old Republic Edition podcast, available at theinstance.net/TOR, or find them on Twitter, @TorShow. Help this week comes from the Flash Pulp Podcast, a podcast full of fiction, fisticuffs, and flimflam. Find them at flashpulp.com or on iTunes.
Yes, sir, I'll do her, but pretty soon you're going to be on your own. Come next week, I'm getting the hell out. Ain't no business here. This town is finished.
Was born without a conscience. This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to FilmSack. This is FilmSack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. I happen to be Scott Johnson, and joining me tonight happens to be Brian, dead horse covered in flies, Dunaway.
Hi, happen to be Brian. Hi, I'm Smiley, the local undertaker in Jericho. Putting dead men in boxes in business is good. But I refuse to scrape that dead, bloated horse out of the street. I ain't that Smiley.
Hey, you mentioned the horse. That's awesome.
Yeah.
We didn't plan that, folks. I say it was episode 98, by the way. I'm getting close to 100, guys. Just throwing that out there. Also with us, Randy Hickey Jordan.
Aloha, Scott, Brian. This week's film reminded me of this time a few years ago that I had a job supplying bullets to people who gunfight a lot. Really good business to be in because they always needed more bullets. Now, you would think they would eventually kill everyone and not need more bullets, right? You'd be wrong. Just one little town in the desert can house millions and millions of people who need killing.
Well, each other. There was nobody else there besides them people that wanted to kill each other. Rounding us out today, we have Brian. You got your Western in my mobster, Ibbit.
Hey, I've got this great idea for a movie. We'll have two warring gangs in a town, and then Bruce Willis is going to find himself in that town pitting them against each other. Cool? All right. Can you think of a way we could really make it horrible, though? Yeah. Okay, let's make the whole plot convoluted and slow. We'll kill any possible charm or sense of humor for Bruce Willis, and we'll make Christopher Walken take out all the vocal inflections that make him unique. Anything else?
Yeah, I'd love that.
Sure, we'll make the funniest person in the town that robot builder guy from Blade Runner.
You mean this is Daryl, my other brother Daryl, that guy?
I love that guy. There was no room in your joke there to actually do the voice, but the voice that everyone adapts in this film is just awful.
Yeah.
Everybody talks like this the whole movie.
Except for Doyle, man. That guy got animated.
And you find yourself perking up when someone isn't talking like this. Yeah. You're like, it really actually makes you listen when someone isn't. But when they go back to talking like that, and actually one of the women does it too. It's bizarre.
Yeah. They're all the Batman, dude. They're all
looking
the Batman.
I'm looking forward to the clips in this episode.
We got some gooders today.
You have to tell us who's speaking.
I'll do my best. It's Last Man Standing, ladies and gentlemen. I never saw this film when it came out. Came out in what, 97, is it? Let me see.
It is 96, rather. 96,
according to IMDb. That could be off. Directed by Walter Hill, written by a bunch of people. It's a Kurosawa story, so it's based on some Kurosawa film, story,
Yohimbo.
Movie.
Yohimbo.
That one. Stars Bruce Willis, Bruce Dern, William Sanderson, some other guys named Bruce, and a few others.
It's filmed in Australia with a whole bunch of people named Bruce.
Christopher Walken was the stuff. I thought the same thing. I saw this movie back in the day, and I saw it at the theater.
Yeah.
And I remember Christopher Walken. I don't remember him being like that. I remember so much later on just remembering Christopher Walken with his voice and his kookiness and everything. But in this movie, I don't remember him being castrated, basically, with the whole stabbed in the neck with a, you know, with ice pick. Right. And I thought the same thing when, like what Brian Ibbett said when I was watching. I was like, oh, it's too bad that you have one of the funniest, weirdest sounding dude ever in Christopher Walken, and he has to whisper the whole time.
Yeah.
They kind of, it's like getting Steve Buscemi in your film and then making him wear a mask.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
It'd be a big mistake. Anything covering that guy's eyes, big mistake. I got a little news flash for everybody. Our first Christopher Walken film. Finally. What the hell took us so long?
Wow.
Christopher Walken actually makes some pretty good movies that aren't fun and funny and unintentionally awful.
Have you ever seen Flick? Like
Well, yes, but I've also, you know, there's other things to, like, I would love to do the rundown for this movie or for this show. Yeah. I'd love the rundown.
Yeah, that's a good one for film tech.
He's great. And I, you know what? I don't complain in Last Man Standing when he's on screen. I will look at Christopher Walken, pick his nose in public if that's what you told me to do.
I'm just saying that the reason we've seen Sir Michael Caine is because there was a long period in his career when he would do anything for a paycheck. He said he actually has said many times that he made bad films because they were offering him roles.
Right.
And Christopher Walken ain't that kind of guy. He looks at a script before he takes it.
Nah, I'm not doing this.
Except for this one, maybe.
I don't know.
It's funny. He's in go ahead.
You come along and say we're remaking a Kurosawa film, I think that's going to get a lot of great actors.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. It's all execution in this case. And I didn't hate this movie. I actually kind of had some fun with it. I think there was a lot of really dry, drawn out, sort of way too much time spent on stupid ideas parts of it, but it was you know, the shootouts, despite the excessive use of bullets,
way excessive use of bullets,
it's kind of a cartoon, you know. I kind of had fun with it.
You can see, you know, how they'd use those bullets when you see that giant table that Bruce Willis is loading all of his magazines with. And it's like they just gave him a grocery bag full of bullets. No boxes, you know, not organized or anything. It's like there's a barrel with a scoop in it.
And mm-hmm. This is the epiphany. This is the epiphany.
It's $18 a pound.
Exactly. By the pound. Come on now.
Yeah.
But this is the quintessential mobster movie where everything is like the Valentine's Day Massacre. No one gets killed by one bullet. You just have to get ravaged with bullets. I mean,
but for whatever reason, the entire film takes place in a world with no snipers. There's never no one ever thinks, you know, this guy who just showed up in town, we should just kill him and then we wouldn't have any problems and just shoots him out a window, you know?
Yeah. His guns didn't feel period correct to me.
Oh,
They were like 9mm or something.
Yeah. Those didn't seem right. I mean, the Tommy guns, those were fine. The shotguns and various like sort of holdovers from the old West pistols a few people had were fine. But he would pop out with these like P9s.
But I just want to say for gun nut listeners, they were period correct. They did not have any later 20th century weaponry in this film. When was the film supposed to? When is the 20s. Setting supposed? To,
well, it's during Prohibition. During the height of the Chicago mob stuff.
All right, but like I say, there weren't any like World War II or later guns in this film. It's just that this film attempts to go way deep on sound and sound mapping and sound effects.
Yeah,
they do. This film has some of the most rich and ridiculously loud sounds I've ever heard in a film.
Yeah,
and they really guns have always been loud, but they really made the guns sound modern. And I would agree. Jarring.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And maybe that's part of it. Maybe that's part of the problem. I felt like I was watching a period piece.
Pew!
Yeah, there wasn't so much of
that noise.
And a lot of the stuff in the late 80s, they used a lot of repeating sounds. So a gunshot 1 second would sound identical to the next one that Dirty Harry took or whatever.
Yeah.
This started this trend in the 90s, sound design in the 90s, where things got more layered and more digital and more interesting and varied, and so you could do a lot of,
I'd like to take the sound editor out behind the bar and have a gunfight with him, because this film, to understand the mumbling when they're all talking like this, you have to turn the volume up quite a ways. And then the gain on the gunshots, which are as loud and compressed as they can possibly be, is just ear-blowing.
Yeah.
It was hard to
And there were times, like when he was in, he was getting it on with Apatow's wife, what's her name? Mm-hmm. Can't think of her name.
Leslie Bibb.
Leslie Mann.
Leslie Mann. Sorry.
Who I'm quite a fan of. I think she's great. But he's in there. This is a role before she was anybody. And they're in there getting it on. And they suddenly, a gunman, you know, busts through. You go from dead quiet, she's talking like a mouse audio, to, oh my gosh, there is a nuke in my brain. You know, it's so loud.
and that's my complaint, because I was using headphones while watching this film. I'm using really sensitive noise canceling Philips headphones. And oh wow, there were times when I threw them off my face.
Really? I saw this at the theater and it played well theater. I mean, it just sounded fantastic at theater. Yeah, in your living room, unless you've got some really good setup, it's hard to hear.
So here's the story. According to Scott Fletcher, he breaks it down each week.
Wow. We haven't even Scott Fletchered this yet.
No, we have not even Fletchered this, and we're going to do it now. Scott Fletcher tells us more about what this is about and what happens within the annals of Last Man Standing.
Last Man Standing. John Smith, played by Bruce Willis, is a mysterious stranger who is drawn into a vicious war between two Prohibition-era gangs. In a dangerous game, he switches alliance from one to another, offering his services to the highest bidder. As the death toll mounts, Smith takes the law into his own hands in a deadly race to stay alive. Bruce Dern and Christopher Walken co-star in this American reinterpretation of the 1961 Japanese film Yojimbo.
could have done without Bruce Dern, honestly. He annoyed the hell out of me.
He's normally such an engaging, compelling actor, and it seemed like just a wasted role for him.
Yeah, well, I don't know what you're doing here. I didn't see a damn thing. I'm the shittiest damn sheriff there ever was.
Useless. He was
a throwaway role.
I know later it was kind of a little bit of redemption in there, but even not much. It's like, well, I showed up with a gun. Here you go. Now I'm taking off again. Don't worry about me.
See ya.
Really, really weird. But
a bit of a crutch.
I kind of have a problem too. When I look at him, I see his daughter all the time.
Yeah,
his face.
Laura Dern.
Yeah. And it just kind of freaks me out.
I kept thinking Jurassic Park every time I saw him.
Yeah, it's like she trying to squat behind a bush, telling herself to run, so she can beat the. Says you can beat the raptor to the place where she finds Samuel L. Jackson's arm hanging in the fence. Remember that?
I do.
Kind of want to watch Jurassic Park now, to be honest. Anyway, he's whatever, he's fine. But as far as other cast goes, there's some big names in here and some guys I really respect. So I'll just a few to throw out there and then let's talk about these guys. So, of course, Christopher Walken can, in my mind, put him in a Pooh movie and I don't care. I'm still very compelled. Yeah. I love to watch him. I love him in roles where he's got dead eyes and he has no conscience and is sort of this soulless killer.
Yeah, and he didn't show up until later because they kept building him up. Oh, just wait until Homeboy gets back. Y'all in big trouble.
Yeah, he kept talking about this hickey guy and how crazy he was and how he slit his father's throat and blew up his school or whatever. And
it was a weird thing. It was a weird way to do it too, because it was almost like, yeah, he's off shooting another film. He's not going to be able to. He's going to be an hour late. When he gets here. We'll get him caught up.
We'll put that bad fake scar on his face, and he'll be good to go.
Walken got the role too. He didn't mishandle the thing. Like I felt like Bruce Willis wasn't directed very well. Almost like Bruce Willis was kind of making up the role for himself. And it's not bad. It's just it didn't have anything to chew on. Whereas Walken, he really got it. Like he just embodies this character. He's frightening. He really pushes his face into every scene he's in. I really like that kind of thing. But unfortunately, everybody's talking in this horrible voice. Yeah. And Walken just personified this. It's like a really angry beehive that's commentating for a golf match.
That's actually pretty well said. Really. Yeah, he's on the fourth green, and
exactly.
Feeling pretty good about this.
Yeah,
that's a good way to put it. So William Sanderson plays Joe Monday. He is one of my all-time favorites. He was great in Tombstone. What the hell am I trying to say? Deadwood, amazing in Deadwood, and should be praised for his work there. But he's been in millions of things. Chances are, if you've seen movies in These America, United States, then you've seen William Sanderson do something.
Did everybody want to watch Deadwood watching this film?
Yeah. I wanted to watch Westerns, period. That's what I do when I
Deadwood
see something
Deadwood particularly.
Like this.
Something about Deadwood besides him.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But the thing about Deadwood, as sort of dank and dark and wet that town was and how messed up everybody was, that at least it was a town with people in it. This had no people in it. It had the mechanic hayseed guy, the worthless sheriff, and Joe Mundy running the hotel, and the rest were gangsters, either Irish or freaking Italian. And that was it. There was nobody else in this town. Except, and the caretaker. Sorry, forgot about that.
Well, the caretaker. Smiley, who I love. But right. Yeah, that was probably the biggest plot hole for me in the whole movie. It's like I never got to see the bus station, but the bus came through once a day to haul off the women. But you never saw them. I loved it.
Right.
Brian Dunaway has just succinctly defined a third of the film.
Right.
Where
is this woman coming from? Where's the bus?
Off the women.
I've said on the show before the reason I like post-apocalyptic stories and Westerns generally is because they're trapped in their own time, right? There's almost like this endless wall-less space, and this movie does that but takes that too far. And another movie that almost does it but still works for me is The Quick and the Dead. And the reason The Quick and the Dead does it better is because there are actually damn people in that town, but it's still it's a closed environment, right? Like it's literally domed off from the rest of reality. And this movie does that in spades. It just doesn't have anybody else there, so I feel like I'm playing a driving video game where there are no pedestrians, and I find that really haunting and weird. I don't like that.
The town was so empty, you expected the Brady kids to be locked in a jail cell somewhere.
Right.
This is a result of its pedigree. This film, as a remake of Yojimbo, the thing about Kurosawa films was that he liked to have empty spaces. Mm-hmm. And so you would have a samurai standing in the middle of a street with dust and buildings, but no one else.
Yeah.
Oh my God. And the dust in this movie.
Oh, I know. We got to talk about that. But anyway, the point is they really went to great lengths to pay homage to Yojimbo. And that's why the town feels so empty, except when you actually do a body count, it's ridiculously full of people. They're full of the rafters of people who get killed. But they really, I think they did a good job of giving you an idea of what it would be like if Kurosawa had made a film, 50 years later.
I think that's true. And you definitely get more of Kurosawa vibe out of this movie than I do a lot of those sorts of inspired, not remakes, but retellings or whatever, like the Seven Samurai versus Magnificent Seven
with Tom Cruise.
No.
Is that right?
Magnificent Seven. I'm talking about
that was Last Samurai.
Yeah, that's not it. I'm talking Magnificent Seven. So, and that's also dated, right? 68 or 63 or whatever.
Right. Magnificent Seven is only a few years after Seven Samurai, so there's not the huge gap in tech.
Yeah.
But you're absolutely right. There's a huge difference there between the way Kurosawa would shoot film and the way what's his name?
John Ford. Not that other guy. I know who you mean.
Yeah, but anyway.
If only we had a series of internet connected computers.
Walter
Hill? Us.
You mean the director of this movie?
No, not that.
No, the director of
Magnificent Seven. And almost all of Kurosawa's films have been remade at one time or another. In fact, this one's been remade a couple of times.
Oh, by the way, the Magnificent Seven TV series, which was a syndicated show in the 90s with Michael Biehn and what's his name? Yeah. The guy that plays Hellboy. I can't think of his name. Ron Perlman. Whole bunch of cool actors. That's all on that whole series is on streaming Netflix. You guys should, listening should get it. Yeah, I really enjoy it. It's super watered down, but it's fun.
I'm gonna confess that I've never actually seen The Magnificent Seven.
I'm
gonna confess since Brian Ibbett has come forward first.
John Sturges is the director of Magnificent Seven as well as The Great Escape, Eagle Has Landed, really famous, great director, and got to know Akira Kurosawa later. Not really relevant to this film.
Not at all. This is... Oh, man. Kind of love that stuff. Anyway, but I'm a fan of any of this open, dirty town, nobody's here, what's going on stuff, so whatever, bring it. I think I probably will come away enjoying this more than I should because it really isn't that good. It's not well-written. The dialogue's dumb.
I like the let's face it, this is just a guy film, and I like the idea of it, of a lone gunman kind of coming into town, was really just going to pass through, then got pulled into this and decides he's going to make some money, and he shoots people. And that's pretty much what this movie's about.
That's it. It's very noirish, They've gone, like, again, they're dipping into these two very distinct wells. It's like, here's our Western bits, and here is our, that dame walked into my life tonight, you see? I mean, that kind of stuff is pulled out. Yeah. And then there's a little bit of, Goodfellas / Untouchables. Yeah, for sure, in there. I just think I probably liked it more because all of those genres in their most simple presentations are still good to me. Like, I will watch those things no matter who made them, no matter who's in them, and still like them because I'm a, just such a fan of the genre films of these types, of those three types. Yeah. So it just, for me, it.
Plus, is Bruce Willis. I have never seen a Bruce Willis movie that I went, that was stupid.
Well, he's kind of John McClane in this. He's John McClane who forgot to take his depression medication.
Yeah, exactly. And he's also, you know, there's a lot less that it seems like is driving him. Bruce, you know, in Die Hard, McClane is survival is what's, you know, keeping him alive and what's motivating him.
Right.
You look at other movies with Bruce Willis, you know, it's either love or something or, you know, fortune, fame, whatever is driving his character. In this, it's like the only thing driving his character is he needs to get his headlight replaced.
That's pretty much it. They punctured his tire. And
this is the one thing this town doesn't have is a Checker Auto Parts, I guess.
It's just got that guy going, well, I know what don't take to get here, but I'm gonna be going anyway. So, the one colorful guy in town is leaving.
Where's that guy? I love that guy.
I don't know. I couldn't find him. I couldn't nail him down in the credits. But
he's funny
anyway. But I do want to mention a couple other actors. So David Patrick Kelly, not our first time with him. He was in the Dirty Harry movie we watched. He's freaking great.
He's the looming guy that is like looming in the door constantly.
He's Doyle, and he's the leader of the Irish side, and he is great and really effective in this movie. And I got some great clips from him. And every time he's on some movie, I like him, and I loved him in, for example, K-Pax, which I know a lot of people don't like K-Pax, but he played one of the mental patients in that movie, and it is a subdued, totally opposite from this kind of performance. I will watch again. That's a guy I'll watch do anything. I love David Patrick Kelly. He's
anybody awesome. Have a favorite David Patrick Kelly role?
This might actually be one of mine.
Wow.
I know. Again, the surrounding movie's kind of poo, but I like a sadistic, destroy everything, rip everything apart, angry acting kind of thing. But at the same time, this desert flower Mexican lady is on his mind, and he longs for that. I don't know. I just found his character to be a little bit more multidimensional than anyone else, really.
And I think he wins for best IMDb picture this week out of the actors.
Oh, right. He's half off the picture. You only see half his face.
Yeah.
I remember when I looked him up while I was watching this film, and I thought, who puts a publicity photo up themselves with half the face? Yeah. Only half the face.
Half the face.
It's artistic.
It's autistic. Yeah. I got you.
My good side.
He was the, for those who may not remember this, he was the leader of the leather-clad gang, the Rogues, in Walter Hill's other controversial New York City gang film, The Warriors. Remember The Warriors? Why haven't we watched that?
I love The Warriors. I mean, it is so black and white, literally.
He was in Commando. He's in a bunch of stuff, and you see him and you go, oh, yeah, that guy I've seen 1,000 times, and he never phones it in. He's always great. He played Howie in K-Pax. If you don't see K-Pax for any other reason... And there are plenty of reasons to see it.
I think Spacey's great in that film, actually.
Streaming, I believe, I want to say.
I heard people talk about Fisher King.
One of my favorite crappy movies, The Adventures of Ford Fairlane, the Andrew Dice Clay vehicle, has David Patrick Kelly in a major role. Yeah. And he's really, really good. He actually raises the level of the film by his presence.
Is it bad? I'm sorry to bring this up now. It comes up occasionally on shows. So I actually, every time it comes up, I go, I should say this. But now I'm going to say it.
Okay.
I cannot stand Andrew Dice Clay in any version
sort
of himself.
Sort of his shtick, right? The goal of Andrew Dice Clay as a stand-up is to make you not like him. He wants you to walk out.
Yeah, I think it's just that I don't think he's funny. Like he's supposed to be a comedian, right? Like that's the deal.
He's a successful stand-up comedian.
I know.
He's filled stadiums.
No. Don't get me wrong. Well, he's not now, but he used to. You're right. He's not filling anything, to be honest.
Except the toilet.
And I feel like a part of that is because the reason he's not filling stadiums anymore is because that weird "I want you to hate me and walk out" shtick is just tired. Yeah. We're done with it. But I don't. Yeah, I never thought he was funny. And even back when I should have liked him because he was edgy and my parents would hate it, I just couldn't laugh. Just not funny.
So I don't know if any of you ever listened to Howard Stern on Sirius, but some of the funniest moments in the last 5 years of him being on Sirius satellite radio have been when Andrew Dice Clay is on his show.
Wow.
Seriously.
Like laugh out loud funny?
Yes. Laugh out loud, unbelievably funny. Andrew Dice Clay is a really, really funny stand up.
Not just like, not just like, ha ha ha, where's the flamenco channel kind of funny?
I have a really good friend who is a huge Andrew Dice Clay fan, and he makes me watch it all the time, as recent as last weekend. And I try to like it. I really do.
Yeah.
But it's really hard. I mean, it's just constantly with the sexuendos, and then he'll give that.
Did you say
like,
sexuendos? Because that is a badass way of saying that.
Sexuendos.
Is there an apostrophe halfway through that?
No, whatever. Oh, so, you know, he's always, you know, he's smoking. So I don't know. I kind of want to like him, but it's really hard.
We should watch Adventures of Ford Fairlane.
It wouldn't hurt because that movie is crap anyway. So
<That's good. laughs> I just can't get my head around it. But anyway, that's not this movie. We could talk about that, but yeah, Flannery, awesome. Love that guy. I could watch him. Seriously. I could watch him rake poo for a living and I would be fine with it. There are others. The one I wanted to pull out here, though, specifically died way too soon. That's Patrick Kilpatrick.
Mm-hmm.
One of the greatest, not since Rip Torn, as a man had a cooler name in Hollywood, and I'm not kidding.
Right.
Love that name. He was born Robert Donald Kilpatrick, but he will always, to me, be Patrick Kilpatrick.
Yep.
Huge guy. He got killed way early, but this guy, you've seen him in Minority Report, Under Siege 2, The Replacement Killers, which I freaking love. I can't wait till we do that movie. Mm-hmm. He was on Nip Tuck recently. Nip Dick
what
Tuck.
What was you going to say?
Dick Nip Tuck. Dick. You know, Dick Tuck. and various other bits here and there, a lot of TV spots and stuff. Great in 24, an episode of 24 I remember seeing. He's just awesome, this guy.
Mm-hmm. He was.
And I would – he's the guy – he got poked with the puke stick in Minority Report now. Dunaway may not remember that because he hates that movie, but
I don't remember anything about that. All I remember is, oh my gosh, I don't remember much.
Yeah.
Except rolling my eyes. Oh.
I just watched it again with the kids about 2 weeks ago. Still
Did
love
you
that
really?
Movie. Yeah, I love it. Love
it. He's a cop with a drug problem. Oh.
Tropey, yes. But that movie, it's knowingly tropey. It's like, hey, we're like a film noir movie in the future.
No, I know he's bad when everybody says, oh, you didn't get the ending. What do you mean I didn't get the ending? Oh, after he goes into the prison, after he goes into, you know, cybernetic sleep or whatever. Yeah, that's just him dreaming. I'm like, bullshit. That's just you making an excuse for a crappy movie.
I love that movie. You're fully. We have to. Let's make that happen for this show. We got to watch that. Minority Report is on the list. Damn. We have to. We got to make it.
Yeah,
If only to make Dunaway watch it again.
I don't know if he would. There's a good question there. That if it was on streaming, would Brian Dunaway watch it?
He'd have to.
I'd have to.
For the show.
Choice for the show.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to do it again when I watch Die Hard, which I just saw like 3 weeks ago, and we're doing that soon.
We all sign the contract. We'll send it around. Whatever I choose, you know, whatever comes up, you guys have to watch.
I know. I proved my constitution last week by watching The Swarm. And what else did we watch? Oh, my gosh. It was like
Maverick, six hours of
stuff.
Yeah, it was long. No question about any of that. But I love this idea that we've got a clause. And it's like the for better or worse clause in this film sack contract that doesn't really exist. All right.
I'm excited that Die Hard is on streaming. That's awesome.
Yeah, Die Hard is a fantastic film. In every way, and I can't wait to watch it. And I think some of the others are as well. Die Hard 2 and 3 and 4 and maybe 5. Mm-mm. Or is 5 being worked on? I don't know. Is that what's happening?
Yes, there is a Die Hard 5 coming in 2013.
Like, in the works.
They may actually have a release date by now.
Walter Hill, by the way, the director of this film. I just want to make mention that he has he has 90210 eyes. If you go look at his photo, he is suffering from the very real problem.
Hi, my eyebrows are really sexy.
It's Doherty.
Kidding.
It's ocutosis Doherty-itis is what it's referred to.
It is.
It's like he's always giving you the stink eye, like,
And the other eye, the other eye is giving you something else. That's the beauty of it is it's like two faces in one.
That's right. What'd you think about that? Mm.
But this guy, he's done some stuff like
Aliens and Alien.
Yeah. And he's produced things like, as a producer, he helped produce Deadwood and other.
I forgot about Red Heat.
Tales of the Crypt stuff. Oh, yeah. Dead Heat. Remember that?
Oh, my God.
Or did you say Red Heat?
Red Heat.
No, Red Heat.
Red Heat with Schwarzenegger and the other Belushi boy.
Yep.
Yeah.
James.
Oh, he directed. James. He directed. Oh, wow. He directed a bunch of Deadwood.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know what, it's, Randy? You nailed the sensibility there because that's definitely a Deadwood feeling.
This whole film, it just feels like an inferior episode of Deadwood. Yeah. Like, just could have been better.
Yeah, he was getting his groove on. He was trying to figure it out.
He cut his teeth on this too.
My favorite film he directed is Brewster's Millions.
Oh man,
I'm looking through this list and I'm agreeing. It's like, all right.
Yeah, but the first 48 hours, the 48 hours was pretty good. The first one.
I disagree. In fact, I hope we get a chance to all watch it together because I don't think that's a good movie at all.
Really? It's been a long time, so maybe not. Maybe you're right. It's been a long, long time. Geronimo, an American Legend with Wes Studi, that kicks ass.
That's a good movie. Mm-hmm. That's a good movie. I'm just saying Brewster's Millions is better.
Oh, that was like his weird little Western thing. There's that Wild Bill version he did.
Yeah, with what's his face? Is that Jeff Bridges?
Jeff Bridges, yeah. It was not very good. But
no, it was horrible. I remember falling asleep in that film.
But wait. Is this the guy who directed Crossroads? Because I love that movie.
I don't know.
The Britney Spears one? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No. The Ralph Macchio, Jamie Gertz film.
No, that's My Cousin Vinny.
No. I'm telling you, this is the guy who directed Crossroads.
Is it? Oh, you're right. It is Crossroads. '86.
Love that movie. I love that movie.
It's decently Daniel rated song. In here. Yeah, it's got Ralph Macchio. It's got a bunch of other people.
It's got some great blues guitar.
It's got Harry Carey Jr. as a bartender in it.
Oh, awesome. I love Harry.
Hey, Norm. Yeah.
Hey, Norm. Love that guy.
Wow. Dunaway has a Harry Carey.
Hey, we're doing that thing we do with movies where the movie wasn't that great, so we're off on another movies. Yes, you notice we're doing that? That's awesome.
But the fact is that Walter Hill has made better movies than Last Man Standing. A lot of better movies than Last Man Standing.
Hey, can I ask you a quick question of... Oh, never mind. That's the movie we're watching next week. I've mixed up my notes. Sorry.
We should do these two at a time.
Just before the penultimate shootout, John returns to the hotel. The short scene starts with a shot of a framed photograph hanging on a wall and then tracks to the outside. The photograph is of Wild Bill Hickok.
It is.
And he was about great. To start working on that anyway. So
interesting.
There you go. I think it was next movie.
That was the movie before this one.
Oh, was it?
Yep. Maybe it was a throwback.
Look at that.
It's leftover props.
Exactly. What else we got?
Is that great scene in Wild Bill where Wild Bill is standing in front of a picture of himself on the wall?
Oh, you're totally right.
Yeah. If we're talking about the film Wild Bill, right?
Wild Bill, yes.
Yeah, Jeff Bridges will do anything
for a bit of cash. Yeah,
he's the American Michael Caine.
Doesn't Deadwood seem that came out in 2004? You guys, jeez, 2004 feels so far now.
Weird okay, guys. This right. this winter I vouched to make sure I get through some more Deadwood because I've got the box set upstairs and we've barely opened the seal.
I am of the opinion that Deadwood is one of the finest Western experiences you'll ever have.
Exactly. We've barely experienced at least 20 or 30 F-bombs
in the first 10 minutes. Yeah.
Well, you got to remember this is the reason you need to watch Deadwood is because of the writer David Milch.
Yeah, Milch
this is
amazing.
This is the guy who, was a writer on Hill Street Blues and Brooklyn South.
NYPD Blue. Yeah.
Like amazing, amazing work.
Yeah.
And that's what Deadwood is all about. Like you could really have this entire show, Deadwood, could be the actors sitting around on high stools reading their lines. Yeah. And that would be good enough.
Yeah.
Because the scripts are so good.
No, it's true. I love there's a bit of trivia with Deadwood according to commentary. And if you have the box set, you'll hear this if you ever listen to it. But Milch is said to have said they originally started out with period appropriate profanity in Deadwood. And they took it out and changed their minds because everybody sounded like Yosemite Sam all the time.
What the farkity fark? What was it? What was the period piece cussing? I don't understand what
it was like. Concern. It was like very, very cartoony, very old. And it would have been very appropriate for the time. But to give this thing the weight that it has today, by today's standards, you kind of had to push those buttons that today would go, oh my gosh, this is rough stuff here. And that's what they decided to do. So it can be a little jarring at first. Like at first you're like, nah, these guys didn't talk like that in 1850, blah.
1890s,
whatever it was. But you soon go, oh, I see what they're doing here. I mean, it's very, very good. Oh, that show is so good.
I had a friend in Austin who had a Deadwood, like a sign on a casting door. Mm. For Deadwood, that he had ripped off and framed, and they were casting for extras for females for the show. And the big criteria for becoming an extra on Deadwood was that you not have fake breasts. Mm-hmm. And the sign actually says, just turn around and walk away if you have fake breasts, because this is a show that takes place in the 1890s. There was no such thing. Mm-hmm. And it just, I don't know why, it blows me away that they were that interested in realism.
Yeah, yeah, making that show. Yeah. Well, you wouldn't know it because they pushed them boobies all the way up. Mm, there you go.
Yeah. I will say one thing about Last Man Standing that weirded me out a little bit. We just finished watching, prior to this, me and the family just watched Hannah for the first time, which came out last year.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I really liked Hannah. I know there's things are mixed on it, but I thought it was really interesting and very dark and very unexpectedly directed, like very, very Art Nouveau, independent sensibility about it. It felt very European in a lot of ways. Well, lots of ways. But anyway, that movie's really fantastic. And something about it reminded me of Last Man Standing, and I can't quite put my finger on it other than...
It's probably because there's no humor at all.
Yeah,
nothing's funny.
Nothing's
funny. I love it that Scott Johnson would say a German film feels very European. I just love that.
Well, I mean, I don't mean that. It's like American... Well, the director's British, and it's not... I mean, the Germans didn't... It's not German-produced. It's American producers on it. I mean, it's got all sorts of flavor from lots of different input, but... But like the British director obviously has a flair for the sort of silent French films, even though it's not silent.
I think Scott's arguing with me. Here's a question. If something is filmed in Canada, is it a Canadian film?
No, it is a episode of Battlestar Galactica. if you want the real skinny on that. Really, really dug it though. But this movie's Last Man Standing didn't come close to Hannah. But again, I like a revenge, I don't quite know what's going on with the main character sort of tale. I'm okay with that. I'm down with that. It's Book of Eli. It's in fact, Book of Eli reminded me a lot of this movie too. Not just for the dusty road of it all, but the kind of nobody's there and it's one guy you don't really understand, and it's
this
bone crushingly violent sometimes.
This movie affected me long term because this is my first introduction to Ry Cooder and his music. Yeah, his music is just wow.
Yeah, cool.
I didn't even know who he was. Wait.
My first introduction. Explain what you're saying there.
Back in 96, when I saw this at the theater, I had never heard of Ry Cooder.
Oh, okay. I thought you were saying 2011, which is going to be weird.
No. Back when I first saw this at the theater, when I saw it, I went away. I was like, holy crap, I got to have this soundtrack. It's like the best soundtrack of it ever. I just loved all those bassy, loose bass strings, and just it was just fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You should check out a group called Little Village that he was part of with Nick Lowe. It was like a super group, kind of like the Traveling
Nick Wilburys. John Hyatt.
Billy Bremner. Yep.
Yeah.
Great. Only released one album, but it was they were so good.
Not Billy Bremner. Jim Keltner was the drummer.
Keltner. That's right. Yep.
What kind of? Remind me what the exit song was. Wasn't it
in Last Man Standing?
Yeah. Was there one?
It was over the... Yeah.
I might be thinking of Lethal Weapon 2.
He's the last man standing.
I think it was Take My Breath Away, wasn't it?
Oh, my God.
No, that would be great, wouldn't it?
I hate movies that do that, have this one soundtrack all the way through, and then the end credits is all of a sudden they blow into something weird, mainstream. Take my breath away.
Disney movies do that, you know?
They do.
Oh, by the way, I was finally... I'm sorry, I don't mean to keep doing this, but I really like Tangled. I thought it was great.
I've seen part of that. I haven't watched it, but it looked really good for me.
It's really good. It's a return to form for those guys. I loved it. Anyway, sorry.
I was actually ambivalent about Tangled. I was set up to love Tangled, and I came away like, all right, I don't want to ever see that again.
Oh, wow, really? I really liked it.
Last Man Standing was an Elmer Bernstein soundtrack.
Oh, way to go, Elmer.
Yeah, I thought it was really good.
Let's see. I don't know. When I first started the movie, I went, oh, Western with cars. That's kind of awesome. It kind of left me after a while. But at the first, I just thought, oh, what a weird mix you guys are doing here, kind of crossing it over. And this town somehow, you know, nobody knows it still exists. It's out in the middle of nowhere and still basically the same town. In fact, I don't know who
except
set
that one
was.
Texas Ranger. There's one guy who knows the town still exists. He comes in and throws his weight.
Oh, the guy from Scrubs. He's great.
I liked him a lot.
clubs. Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, you know what? Let me back that up. Maybe the best performance in the movie was that guy. And he was
for actually, 5 minutes. Was he actually introduced as a Texas Ranger, the character?
No, he was introduced as Dr. Kelso. I don't know if you remember hearing that. I don't know if he did or not, but he came after the other Ranger guy got all shot up by Hickey, an
interesting fact about the state of Texas, still to this day, there are two Rangers for every county in Texas. So it's kind of inconceivable that this guy would sort of be really hands off in this situation.
Yeah.
He and his partner should be up to their neck in what's going on in this town. You know, there should have been two Texas Rangers all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it should have been Walker, Texas.
We just kind of let that town be. You know, we figure one of them will wipe the other one out eventually, yeah. And then we'll.
That sheriff was the best. All right, let's do a trope. All hookers are named Wanda at least once.
Yep. Yep.
Is that a deal? Hey, that's Wanda. A deal.
It is. I think it is.
Yeah. The question is why.
Yeah, and that's the part I cannot give you a good solid answer on, because I don't know why that name screams hooker.
I don't either.
Or brothel or something. There's something in the name Wanda. It's either Wanda or what's another one?
Julia Trixie. Roberts?
Trixie. Trixie. Trixie and Wanda are kind of in the same. Maybe they're separated by some decades, but they're still in the same vein.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say the word vein and hookers in the same sentence, so I'll just move on. what else here? Oh, I got one more of these, and that thing won't play. Why? Won't want to play. A Weasley bartender dude is always not only played by Sanderson, but there's always that guy who runs the hotel and is kind of double crossing people a little bit or sharing information on both sides.
He's a wise guy.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that, though, in a way. So it's a trope I like.
I got a trope.
Oh, wait. Now I got to play it. What do you got?
Women are just for making vengeance. That's all women are for. They get hurt. You got to go exact some vengeance.
Yeah.
It's almost like women are only they're not even really for, you know, having sex with or falling in love with or making babies with. They're just going to get hurt and you're going to go have to kill somebody for it. Thank you very much, m'lady, for showing me that you got hurt. Now I can go do some shooting.
They don't always go full. Let's take her ear off hurting, though. You know, yeah. Like that was pretty brutal, I suppose.
God,
yeah. I'm just saying, did you notice that he didn't respond to her with tenderness. I would like to hold you now. Could I call a doctor for you? No, I got to go kill somebody.
Yes, I need to put my tongue in your ear. Oh, wait, I need to go kill somebody because your ear is just a bloody hole now.
That trope is really amazing. Yeah. And I realized this
on the bus.
This is one of those things. This is one of those things that kind of goes back to Kurosawa. Kurosawa can't help it. He was in Japan making films in the 50s. That means that women were mistreated. Mm. And so I'm not going to blame Kurosawa for it, but it was just amazing to me how there was not a just take a second and tell somebody, I would like to comfort you right now. You look like you're in pain. Instead of, oh, I got to go kill somebody. Yeah. Got to go kill somebody.
No real nudity except for Bruce Willis's A.
The girl who comes to the door.
Which one?
Candlelight boobies, like Ibbit said.
There were some boobies during the first sex scene.
But some see-through-y boobies, though, right?
Yeah. You couldn't see Leslie Mann's boobies, could you?
No,
it was the blonde-headed chick.
Yeah, blonde, but there was no like showing them full-on hanging out, here you go. It was like they were covered in silk or whatever.
Alexandra Powers or Lucy Kalinsky in the movie.
I could have sworn also you saw the Indian gals.
You might have been right. I don't know if I was looking that hard.
I think so. Yeah. I think all I remember is Bruce Willis's butt. That's all I remember.
Yeah, and him nicely spread-eagled in a bathtub.
Yeah, in his dirty bathwater. I love this.
Oh, my God.
What is it with dirty bathwater that makes a movie look old?
I don't know.
Do you really think 100 years ago people bathed in dirty water?
Well, I hope not.
We didn't invent filters until like the 1960s.
They did in Deadwood. I know that.
They didn't in Maverick either. Remember, they were both in the dirty water.
Yeah, I think it's just this assumption that if it's the Old West, nobody had clean water.
Which reminds me of the worst trope in the film. These bullets got momentum. Holy cow, do these bullets have momentum. These
are bullets. Badass?
These bullets weigh 100 pounds each, these bullets.
Pick you up, throw you over the room, drop you down.
Right, make you do, you know, backflips. I love this.
In slow motion.
Two backflips across the street from one, you know, one bullet shot.
You know, actually, it's a fact that when you shoot flesh, people tend to come toward the shot because there's an explosion happening out their back, out the back of their head, out the back of their chest, and it pushes them forward. It was the first time you see him shoot somebody in this film.
It is.
The guy flies through a door out in the street, and it really looked like they put him on wires and yanked him with an explosive.
It made him roll, too.
They did. If you watch one of the cutscenes, if you watch it really close, you can see the wire in just one of the cutscenes. It's really fast. But, I mean, I agree. I thought about the ridiculousness after it, but when I first saw it, I mean, I was like, holy shit.
I know. It's kind of awesome. It's like, how are you going to kill Patrick? Well, let me tell you how. You're going to tie him up on ropes. Yeah.
His middle name. Yeah. All you gotta do.
They were like force bullets from Star Wars or something. They just pick you up and throw you away. That was kind of awesome. Let's see what else. Willis's hair looked weird. I just wrote that down for some reason.
Yeah.
Yeah. And forget waterboarding. What about whiskey boarding? I thought that was a lot more fun.
Don't pour any more whiskey in my mouth. Or I guess let me do his voice. No, don't pour any more whiskey in my mouth.
Was he a Muppet? I love that.
Yes. Apparently. That's pretty awesome. Hey guys, quick break to talk about Audible.com. Now, I know people slam the movie timeline, which surely will show up on FilmSack at some point, based on a Michael Crichton book by the same name. I am told by many that the book is fantastic and worthy of your eyeballs and your reading time. So I'm going to recommend that you guys check it out. It's Timeline, available now on Audible.com. Did you know you can get Timeline or any book on Audible.com unabridged and for free simply by using this link? Go to audiblepodcast.com/filmsack. You can get a free audiobook download today if you've never signed up before. It's awesome. There's so much stuff at Audible, it's kind of ridiculous. Here is a sample, if you will, of Timeline.
Timeline. Introduction. Science at the end of the century. 100 years ago, as the 19th century drew to a close.
That's John Bedford Lloyd, if you want to hear more of him and this great book. Go to audiblepodcast.com/filmsack today. How about this one? The whole movie, you have no problem killing dudes left and right, but you leave McClane to survive. You've killed everybody else, no problem, willy-nilly. But the one guy you need to make sure is dead, you beat the schmear out of him, but then you just leave him.
Leave him to die, yeah.
This was my point about this town having no snipers. It's just bizarre to me. The universe that this movie is in has no snipers. The whole thing ends if one guy walks out onto a balcony and shoots him in the head.
Yeah.
But during that gangster type warring thing, I think Christopher Walken represented it the best. I mean, he came in with a Tommy gun, and that's all he did. He just kind of like laid it out.
You could have a guy. We're not talking like somebody doesn't need a high powered 50 millimeter. They just need to be on a roof with a gun in their hand, you know?
Yeah.
Like some kind of something to,
But I don't think that would be true to the period. I don't know. Was it that almost feels kind of fake to me. I don't remember a lot of talk about snipers during the gangster wars. I don't remember many people getting sniped. I just remember people getting mowed down massacre style.
Yeah. And they went to the 10th degree on that.
That was the point, because those massacres were always like that. It's like, okay, we're going to kill your dude, and you're really going to know he's dead. I mean, we're going to freaking – his body's going to be riddled with bullets.
Yeah.
It's a statement.
Like what they did with the Italian guy from The Sopranos, Giorgio or whatever his name was, where like 25 people shoot him for 8 minutes.
Yeah. It's like, dead. Now you're tenderized. How you like that?
Yeah.
How you like when them bullets apples? Are $18 a scoop. You know, you got to –
They do it like horse feed, just big, big bins of bullets.
All the bullets you can fit into this paper bag, yours for.
I got a bag of bullets. Let's get out of here.
That's awesome. I love that. I had another note about. I want to emphasize this. Does anybody live in the town besides the sheriff, the two gangs, Smith, two hookers, and a hotel owner? Seriously, nobody lived there. So what are they fighting over? What was the point?
They're fighting over the usage of the car mechanic. Like, if they have to, whoever controls him controls the town.
Okay. That's right. Oh, that guy was great.
I don't know what they're fighting over. They didn't make a big deal out of the gambling at the hotel. Mm-hmm. That would have been an industry to fight over if it was a big deal.
Yeah. There's a secondary trope. I won't even play that. I will do this in memory of Bruce Willis.
Slurp my butt.
Who's not dead, but but the idea that you get beaten to this, just seriously, you can barely see. You're blind almost. You're beaten so bad, yet you crawl back, dude, and take it all back again. You win.
Yeah.
How many movies have we seen that in? All of them, I think.
Yeah, and he goes all the way back to his place, and he has to get all fixed back up so he can be bad A. He's got his mashed up eye. I love how he talks about that. His mashed up eye.
The amazing ribs. Abandoned church that has apparently has healing powers, but no bed or shower walls. Or closet. But you know, clothes certainly come out clean and fresh.
Yeah, had a lot of windows. I think I have some of that coming up later. But yeah.
So can we talk about the dust?
Yeah, sure. Let's talk about the dust.
The dust in this film is ridiculous. The dust is it's almost like they came in just off frame and ran fans to somehow make more dust.
Threw like cinnamon powder in it or something.
Right. It was and of course, every time you're seeing these great big swirling windmills of dust, you're seeing people wearing white. The whole film.
Yep.
People are wearing white.
Oh, yeah.
It was bizarre.
Yep. Yep.
Who liked the one tumbleweed that came through town? Just that one. I mean, they only had one.
Wow. Oh my god!
Fantastic. The dust deserves credit in the film.
I must say, on the topic of the sets and everything that they did, I mean, you really got to look at the glass they did, because the glass almost all the buildings had authentic looking glass from that time. It wasn't like the plate glass we see now. I mean, it was all.
Soapy looking,
mm-hmm. bubbled up a little bit, not perfect because you know it couldn't be heated to the degree that we can heat it today, and a lot of glass getting blown up in this movie too.
Yeah. I like that. See, the set was cool. I just think they borrowed it from somebody.
We haven't seen this much glass take it in the face since Battle for Earth.
No,
yeah, right.
Straight the dome.
I forgot about that. I try to forget about everything associated with that movie. So,
by the way, can I do the same trope two movies in a row?
Yeah, you have to do this though. There you go.
The old fastest gun in the West. We just talked about it with Maverick. This guy, Bruce Willis' character, whose name is escaping me, is portrayed as so fast that it makes you wonder what he's doing here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know?
His name is John Smith, by the way.
Yeah. Thank you. That's why his name was escaping me. I wanted to call him something.
I thought he was making a joke, and that's why I didn't. Yeah.
Well, it's easy to forget because it is so generic. Like,
well, he makes it up, right? He makes up his name.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, so we don't really know what his name is.
He may as well have said Doe at the end instead of Smith.
John Doe. Yeah. But right. Fastest Gun in the West.
People named John Smith.
Yeah, dude.
Fastest Gun in the West. Ridiculously fast.
That means that you're never really in danger as long as you have a loaded gun.
Yeah, as long as you have a clip that somehow in the 1920s holds 30 bullets in the clip. And you're able to pop those out the way that they did in Heat and then put more in.
I felt like that got a little old. I don't know about you guys, but I got to where I didn't feel like he was ever at risk.
Mm-hmm. You wanted to turn the difficulty up on him. It's like he didn't. He just was too over OP.
Easy mode.
Yeah, and then when take it away and he had no melee power at all. Like he was just getting creamed.
Yeah, without his guns, he's pretty much useless.
No, you have a big knife. You can get a gun. He said it right there in the church.
So let's get to it. Well, who wins in a gunfight? Mel Gibson from Maverick or Bruce Willis from Last Man Standing?
Maverick couldn't shoot worth a crap. I mean, he was fast, but he couldn't. Accuracy was horrible.
Is that true? We actually saw Maverick make an expert shot in the middle of that film.
I think Maverick is too. Having too good a time to pay attention to the fact that John Smith has no sense of humor and he will tear him up. I think Maverick Zero Smith won.
Plus, Maverick has a faulty holster that fires his gun out and do, you know,
right
up in the air. As soon as he tries to put it in there.
Now, if you can bring one ability from their previous movies, let's say Phenomenon that's not him.
This is a weird game you're making up right now.
Yeah, exactly.
But I was thinking, like, okay, you could take Bruce Willis can run through glass and still survive, right?
Yeah.
So you could totally build. You know what? That would actually be a really fun game. We could just suss out the rules and figure out what it was, but take characters and mash. Okay, you can take one thing from the decade of the 90s from one of their films that gives them this power.
It's Bruce Willis from Maverick. I'm sorry. It's Bruce Willis from Last Man Standing, but he can have one power from The Fifth Element.
Yes. Like, oh, yes. Exactly. Yes. Which is like a flying taxi. He makes money.
I love this game. And you know, it's funny. This movie made me think of games too in genre smashes, because I was thinking, you know who would be the perfect zombie killers? Gangsters.
Oh,
because they got like endless bullets. I mean,
I would watch that. In fact, it probably exists. I just don't know it.
Exactly. That's what I'm thinking.
Something out there.
It'll be the sequel to Aliens versus Cowboys. It'll be Gangsters versus Zombies.
Yeah, why not? I do that.
I was so bored with this game, with this movie. I was so bored with this movie.
Bored with this conversation.
I was so bored with this movie that while watching it, I started imagining that they were actually engaging in children's games, and they were doing fun, light things, because it's a really gritty. Like the movie drags you way down at some point. Like
it's dark.
Two thirds of the way through the film, it's just it's so dark. And so I'm going, oh, look, this isn't two guys fighting in the mud. They're just hugging, you know, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. It's also like it's the town of Tull in the first Gunslinger book. It's really what it is. Like they've taken that, just ripped it out tonally and said, here's your entire movie. But it's funny you should say doing kids activities. Do you guys remember that Bugsy movie, Bugsy Malone,
with
Michael Jackson and all these little kids?
Dick Tracy? What was it?
No, not Dick Tracy. But it had a bunch of kids. Like they were all kids, and they shot whipped cream out of their Tommy guns and stuff.
Yeah.
Does that sound familiar to anybody?
Yeah, I remember that.
Absolutely.
I think it's just called Bugsy Malone.
I think you're right. Or it's just called Bugsy, isn't it?
Bugsy's the one with Richard Gere. Tracy, yeah.
Warren Beatty.
But other one, it's all kids. Michael Jackson's one of them. He's young then.
Yes.
It was just he was still black, I think, back then. he was like the shopkeep or something, and they had all these other little kids. Some went on to other things, but mostly you don't see them anymore. But they were all
Michael Jackson. Oh, anyway.
And it was hardcore gangland, you know, Italian Prohibition era stuff.
Scott Baio,
that's right. And Jodie Foster. And they would shoot each other with machine guns full of whipped cream, and they would throw pies at each other like grenades.
Yeah,
and you would die from it. Like that would be you'd be out.
Yeah,
it was like
Disney movie, wasn't it?
It was like a sadistic game of tag. It was ridiculous. I loved that movie back then.
It's a great movie. Yeah. I've seen this too. This is a great movie.
But as soon as Randy started saying that, I'm like, oh yeah, Bugsy Malone. That show is basically that. So think happy thoughts, and you know, it's not guns. It's Bruce Willis squirting. Whipped cream all over people.
That's how I improved the film in my imagination.
Mm. And it brings new meaning to
smoke my butt.
There you go. All right. Well, I think we're, you guys, how you feel about clips? Anything else?
We haven't even played clips yet. We're like, this is maybe the longest film sack ever. Nah. How long have we been recording?
We've been longer. We're almost an hour, but. Yeah, we're almost an hour.
There are some really great clips from this film. I can't wait to hear them.
All right, well, here we go. These are the clips from the film. Let's start with... I had the Magnificent Seven up. Hold on. Here we go. let's start with this one. Everyone likes the THX sound, right? I like the Miramax logo. I just want to play this for a second. All right, as episode, film intros go, I love
episode
those.
98. You decide to make us listen to the Miramax.
I love that.
That's how good the rest of this movie was. We're listening to the Miramax.
I admit it's weird, but I get a kick out of it. All right, here's some narration early by Bruce Willis on the tales of that terrible Maverick one. Here's the one with Bruce Willis.
I was coming through Texas on my way to Mexico. I needed some time to hide out. I'd spent most of my life on the Dodge. Drunk or sober, I got no complaints. Even even if I did get my hands dirty on the way.
All right. May as well be freaking Greedo talking to Han Solo.
That's
right.
Actually the least gravelly of his gravelly stuff.
Well, dude, did you see all the dust in this town? Of course you're gravelly. You can't. Your sinuses are all clogged up. You can't talk.
You're taking a bath. You're scrubbing your junk in dirty water. All that stuff.
But you can hear that Raikouter music in the background just a little bit.
Yes, I could. I could hear that music.
There's more of that coming. Don't worry.
All right.
Worst sheriff of all time.
I seen it. Right outside the window. You know what I'm going to do about it? Goddamn thing. But I know what you ought to do. You ought to get your spare, put it on your car, and just drive on out of town.
Why are you there? Why are you sheriff?
Yeah.
To annoy people, to make people go, dang it.
I saw the whole thing. I seen you get your stuff stolen and shot up your thing, and I don't know. You know what I'm going to do? Nothing.
I kind of thought it was kind of crappy that Bruce Willis would go in there. I'm like, because as I said, go tell the sheriff. And he's like, all right, I will. I'm going to go tell the sheriff, dadgummit. I'll show you.
Oh, yeah. You wait till you see. Here you go. Okay. Well, what?
Well, damn, he's right.
Yeah. Who pays the sheriff's paycheck?
I don't know. Dr. Kelso does.
Right.
I guess.
I think, I honestly don't know who. Someone said they like Bruce Dern. I never liked Bruce Dern.
I like him. I like him in a lot of movies. I don't like him in this one.
Yeah. No, I never liked Bruce Dern. Like, I've never once thought that he was doing a good job.
He's so filthy. You just know he's going to stab you in the back. No, he's not even going to stab you in the back. You just know he's going to stab you in the front. He's just going to come right at you with the knife and just.
Do you remember that time, though, when he totally freaked out Jeff Goldblum by digging through the Triceratops poop right in front of him? Do you remember that? Oh, wait. I'm sorry. I've done it again.
That was his beautiful daughter.
Oh, Dern. Right.
Who looks nothing like him.
Let's see.
By the way,
Bruce Dern role too. I'm looking to see what I really liked him in.
All right, forget Bruce Dern for a minute. Tell me if anybody noticed this. So the prostitute girl likes Bruce Willis, trusts Bruce Willis, but almost falls in love with Bruce Willis after he threw her into a door head first.
Did not throw her, slammed her.
Yeah,
right.
What's up with that? How do you get from there to here?
She's a prostitute, and you know she's used to guys treating her bad and slamming her head into the wall. That's, she kind of expects that door frame to
She also knows that he thought she was in on it, which she was in on it, but later he's got some time to think about it. She's just trying to survive and is doing her best, and selling him out wasn't really that big a deal. She didn't have anything hanging on him, so, you know.
I'm just not buying it.
Well, it's a lousy argument, I admit. Within the world, but I'm saying in Last Man Standing world universe,
yeah,
that's probably a decent reason.
Well, I mean, let's face it, it's the who's the worst of the evils? I mean, all these guys are really evil to the women, but then they can be really gentle and nice, so it's kind of like that. Plus, it's the 20s. Yeah. I guess what choice did women have in this movie? They had no power at all.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. By the way, the Apatows have the cutest kids. You should see their kids. Right? Oh, they're adorable. Adorable kids. All right. Let's move on.
I bet they're
to,
funny as hell, too. Yeah, between Judd Apatow and Leslie Mann, you got some really funny people.
They met on the set of The Cable Guy, I want to say.
Hell yeah. What a great comedy.
Yeah.
Yes, Scott. Scott, great comedy.
I don't think I thought it was very great. I may appreciate it in retrospect. And by the way, we just watched with the kids The Truman Show, which just to remind everyone, one of the coolest movies ever.
Mm-hmm. Was that on streaming?
Movie. No, we saw it on, we rented it. We got it on Redbox or somewhere.
Rented it?
Yeah, or maybe on Netflix. I don't know what we did, but we rented it. And it was really, really good to catch up with that and see it again. And everybody's good in it. And Peter Weir can make movies until he dies, please. He's just fantastic. It's really, really good.
So he shouldn't waste away to nothing. He should make movies.
So for those out there that agree with me that The Cable Guy was not very good, go watch Truman
the
Show.
Cable, and, the Cable Guy is so good.
Exactly. I think Cable Guy was a fantastic movie. I think a lot of people went in with the expectation that it was a Jim Carrey movie. It's not a Jim Carrey movie.
It's a Ben Stiller movie without Ben Stiller, which is really important. Ben Stiller ruins a movie when he's in front of the camera. When he's behind it, It's awesome.
Shut up. I mean, come on. Night at the Museum 2, whatever. Come on. Shall I say anything else?
Wow, your defense.
This is why I love having the Team Deluxe away, because I know exactly what Brian's saying.
Yeah. All right. Here's the Daryl dude, Joe, when they first meet up.
For Mama. Joe, we got phones, but they ain't working. Since you got to have a switchboard operator to run them.
Yes, my brother Daryl, my other brother Daryl.
I have a switchboard to run them.
That was pretty good. I love that laugh. That laugh, though. So I'm keeping that one. That's pretty good.
That goes in the laugh bank. I love it.
Yeah. Here's more. Yep. Here's more Willis talking.
You got a problem with me, Giorgio? You taking up with your boss? I just work here.
Oh yeah, man. These dinners are awkward, man. It's some awkward dinners in that movie.
That was an awesome dinner. Have y'all ever seen a bigger plate of spaghetti and meatballs?
Oh, God,
that was
pretty
Italian.
Right, big old bowls and...
It was a little cartoony, right?
Stereotypical, too. I mean, we're Italians. Let's have a big bowl of spaghetti and some pasta fagioli.
And some giant French bread, and let's pull it apart.
Yeah. Who's fixing this food? Because it's the only way gangsters
care. That got delivered on the bus.
Yeah, it came in the bus. Our Italian food's here.
Daryl and his other brother Daryl made it.
Right.
Let's see you in West Texas. Oh, this is West Texas comment. I pulled this for Randy's sake. Here you go.
Girls for hire in his town.
Hell yes. You in West Texas?
I love that, dude.
Yeah.
Is that if I go to West Texas now? Is it just a common thing that there's hookers everywhere? And
I don't know what the heck that means. I actually was stuck with that for a long time. I was like, you in West Texas? When I think of West Texas, I think of Chili.
Yeah.
I think of Big Bend.
Yeah.
And I think of a lot of boring ass desert, really boring desert. I never once have thought of prostitutes when I think of West Texas.
Sadly, you know, there is boring. Texas has some seriously boring ass desert. It's not that all deserts have to be boring ass. They don't.
No, the Mojave out here is amazing.
It is. There are parts of that. It's beautiful. There's stuff here in Utah that's amazing. And then there's parts of it you just go, oh, my gosh. Like there's stuff between us and California that makes me want to die.
Yeah.
And there's things on the way to Idaho that will seriously make you want to die and kill other people. It's bad. Anyway, I don't know why I'm fixating on that.
No, I agree.
Let's move over to wise ass Pollock. I just think this is a phrase you don't hear very often anymore. And here it is.
You're getting me more of a wise ass Pollock every day, and it ain't so cute no more.
I love that, dude.
It ain't so cute no more.
Yo,
I did. I felt
But offended. It used to be cute.
Yeah.
These guys are such good fellas. I'll tell you how you get Capone. All right. You lose your car keys. All right, let's see. Let's go on to Doyle going off. Doyle just tripping it.
What the hell are you holding back for?
I don't play this style. What the hell are you holding back for?
Yeah, dude. Look at him. He's got a little steam and stuff leaking out. That guy's great. Christopher Walken. You know what? I tried to capture more of him talking, but it was all hard to hear.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, so. But here's some.
We're taking you out of here, Giorgio. Just don't shoot me. Just don't shoot me.
Hey, Giorgio.
The hard thing is understanding who's who.
I know.
Right.
Yeah.
That was two dudes right then. You tell me which one was which. I don't know.
I don't want to die.
See, that's what you expect from Christopher Walken.
Chicago, maybe, but I don't want to die. Texas.
Oh, that's good. You did a good one.
I think you should dub the whole thing over.
Yeah. Somebody should. That would make it a better movie.
Yeah.
All right. Scrubs dude comes a-talking.
Look, man, I'm concerned about was an American on the Border Patrol. He had a family, well-liked by his brother officers. I guess he strayed a little bit in some departments, but he was an officer of the law just the same.
Oh, I could listen to that kind of talk all day.
Mm-hmm. He was good.
Like, that's True Gritty stuff, man. Like, this one thing I loved about True Grit a year and a half ago was this just that language, that dirty freaking Southern Texas river talking shit. I love it.
Wow.
I just freaking love it.
I'm going with it.
I love it. It's so good. All right. Here's the hick car guy right here.
Yes, sir. I'll do her. But pretty soon you're going to be on your own. Come next week, I'm getting the hell out. Ain't no business here. This town is finished.
There weren't no business before you, dumbass. Who was you?
This town is finished.
You know what?
Do you have any more clips of Kelso, Dr. Kelso?
No, I think that was, he really didn't show up other than that.
He was pretty sure.
No, that was
he legit. Was perfectly cast.
I agree.
As the state police captain.
I mean, I only know him as Kelso pretty much. I've seen other little things here and there, but mostly Dr. Kelso, and he's really comedic and funny in that show. He's great in it. Yeah. But it's weird to see him in this like, kind of serious thing, and it made me hunger for more, man. It's like, oh, you could do other stuff. Let's do other stuff together. Like, oh, I'm totally watching that FX show, Hell on Wheels, the new Western on there.
Oh, yeah.
It ain't no Deadwood, but I'm really enjoying it. And
AMC, actually. It's AMC, I'm sorry.
That's right, AMC. It's great. You guys should. I don't know. No, I don't think anyone here has the same level of enjoyment I get out of anything Western.
the actor we're talking about, Dr. Kelso from Scrubs, also has an entire episode of Star Trek The Next Generation.
Oh, yeah. He's our big connection today. Yeah.
Yeah. He's a doctor that has spent all his life waiting to deploy this specific piece of tech to examine this specific stellar event.
Yeah.
And of course, everything goes wrong on the Enterprise and he doesn't think he's going to get to do it. And he's willing for everyone to die.
Yeah. Just so he can do that.
Yeah.
I totally remember that episode. Yeah. I can't believe that's him.
He's Holy a freak, cow. And they've got him in that beige-looking weird space uniform bullcrap, and it's crazy.
And he's just amazing in that episode. Mm-hmm. And it's otherwise a phoned-in script.
Yeah.
But he just drags it way up.
Yeah.
And I can't think of the actor's name right now. You named him earlier, but he's just one of those character actors that I can't get enough of.
Yeah, that's the guy. What'd you say, Ebbett? What was the name?
Oh, Ken Jenkins.
Yeah, that's it. Mm-hmm. Ken Jenkins. He's great. I would watch him do anything, including try to kill the Enterprise. It's fantastic. We got one more little thing for you.
I'll stick a knife in your throat.
All right.
Was that David Patrick Kelly?
Yeah, a little more Doyle going off. He did the angry acting, but good angry acting.
Yeah.
Dangerous Irish mobster man.
And he wasn't talking like this either.
No, he wasn't
at all.
Nope. But he does lead us straight, headlong, really, into our awards. All right, time for awards. It's where we get a chance to give awards to the film we just saw. And here you go. Best Hooker Ear Removal Award goes to poor what's her name? Lucy, I guess was her name.
Lucy. No.
Best Use of Someone Else's Old Western Set Award. That goes to this film. The Most Bullets in a 20s-era Pistol Clip Ever Award.
Oh, my gosh. Love it.
The Vader Award goes to Christopher Walken, who kind of was the Vader character.
Right.
Voice and all. The unending mullet-making machine... Mullet? Hold on, I'm sorry. The unending bullet-making machine award, but I wrote mullet.
Wow.
Or is it mullet-making? Is it bullet-making or mullet-making?
The letter B is two keys away from the letter M on the keyboard.
That is true. I don't know what I was thinking there, but if we had to give that award, that would be a different movie, probably. It might be Lethal Weapon 2.
Lethal Weapon 2 for Mel Gibson, exactly. Yeah.
Let's do some Star Trek connections. Patrick Kilpatrick plays Finn on Voyager. Plays Finn on Voyager. He played Razik in the Initiations episode on Deep Space Nine. He played Reese in the Siege of AR-558 episode. And he was on Voyager again as an assassin in an episode called Drive. Ken Jenkins, you mentioned him, played Captain Tom Pickett on that same episode. He played Tom Pickett in the movie. On TNG, played Paul Stubbs in Evolution, Season 3. Also, Dr. Bob Kelso on Scrubs, of course. And I would give the soundtrack for this a rated E for eclectic. I loved it. I thought it was really cool. Yeah, now, tell me about the dude again, because I'm not... I know his name, and I've heard his stuff before.
Elmer Bernstein?
Yeah, what else should I be going, oh yeah, that thing from the other thing. Like, what else is he doing? Or has done? Who knows? Anyone know?
Well, I just like Ray Cooter. I mean, I've totally busted into all that stuff. What do you guys think? I mean, that was my biggest part of it.
I loved it. But I don't know. I know I've heard it before, like 100 times maybe, but I don't know what else in. Like, I can't pinpoint it and go, oh, yeah, he was the dude what did blah.
There's nothing else that I knew that he had done before this. But like I said, my this is back in 96. My abilities to really find who was playing music was kind of limited to dial up, 28.8. But
that's true.
Yeah. Right. But, but since then I've always carried it around with me, and I still have that album and I love that album. I'll still pop it in the CD player every once in a while from Last Man Standing. I just know that Ry Cooder to me was what the soundtrack was all about to me.
Mm, I like it. It's really good.
I like it.
I never knew him as a soundtrack guy. I always knew him from, blues and the Hawaiian stuff he did with Hawaiian.
He did a bunch of Hawaiian music. Really? Yeah.
Oh, weird.
And I know
Red
that.
Cooter has a thing for Hawaii.
Over the rainbow kind of stuff.
Great. Over the rainbow. Is that a Hawaiian thing?
Who's that? Who's that big? Who's that big
Israel,
Hawaiian?
Israel Kamikuiwa.
Israel. Yeah. Mm. Yes.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I did the cover of that. Right.
Yeah.
Right. I guess Ry Cooter was good friends with the Hawaiian music legend Gabby Pahinui, and
I think you say Don Ho. Damn it!
so if there's one thing you'll find in a Ry Cooter album called Chicken Skin Music, where he does a lot of slack key, and it's just amazing.
Yay! All right,
slack key.
I have
guitar.
Learned some things today. Honestly, let's do a Twitter post. This is where you guys sum it up. Oh, by the way, I'm going to have a clip for this from now on. I'm going to play. Where is it here? Now I can't find it.
This clip here.
Brian makes a point.
No, that's not it.
Nothing wrong with that clip. Just saying.
I had a clip I was going to start playing for this.
Bleep you.
No. Forget it. Oh, no, here it is.
Hit me with your best shot.
All right, you guys are going to hit me with your best shot. Twitter post, 140 characters or less. 140 characters or less. Let's start this time with Randy. Randy, what do you got?
Last man standing. Bruce Willis and everyone else in town talk like this for the duration of a crappy, dusty gunfight flick. What I'm doing right now isn't going to translate well to Twitter at all, is it?
you have to wrap that in... a gruffy voice tag.
Yeah, you put a little YouTube video up there.
Slash gruff.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah. Let's move over to Brian Dunaway. Brian Dunaway.
Hit me with your best shot.
Last man standing. I know what you're thinking. Did he fire 6 shots or 5,000? Also, know what happens to wise ass block dames? Face to the wall. Face to the wall.
Wow. That was some Patrick Flannery action there you got going. And then finally,
hit me with your best shot,
Brian Ibbett.
Last man standing. Director Walter Hill manages the impossible. He takes the Bruce Willis out of Bruce Willis, the Christopher Walken out of Christopher Walken, and any fun or entertainment out of a gangster western film.
Oh man,
slam!
That was pretty accurate about the actors, though. I really feel that way. Like lost opportunities on both Willis and Walken.
Mm-hmm.
And this also this is 96, and the last movie we watched was Maverick, also 96 or 94, I think.
94, 95.
I think, yeah, 94, something like that in the same time period. Mm-hmm. Voiceover narration, very popular during that time.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It
was a big
Which,
deal.
By the way, can be really good. We talked about it in Maverick. It can really, really work. This film just wasn't lighthearted enough.
It wasn't the worst example, but it's not. Yeah, it's not the best either. Like this ranks up there. It's not as bad as Kiefer Sutherland in Dark City or Harrison Ford in Blade Runner. But there are better uses of a narration, and this was not one. This was kind of in the middle. It was all right.
Yeah.
I didn't hate it. All right. Well, here's what I learned. While you beat Bruce Willis so bad, he started to look like my great uncle Tubby in his 90s. hey, Mexican Army, I don't think you put enough bullets in that car with two people in it.
Right?
Wow, man, that was
crazy.
They
were going.
Yeah.
I loved
it. They were like heads bobbing around.
Can we stop now?
Yeah, I'm never going to Mexico ever again.
Ever. Say what you want, but John McClane can play a mean game of solitaire.
He can.
He was playing that a bunch.
He was.
Let's see. When he got beat up, John McClane's face was like John McClane's feet.
No, that was good. It was like that slick, bloody stuff. I mean, it was a lot.
The big giant guy can sure take a bullet. Notice that? It just took forever for that guy to die.
Yeah.
Jeez.
He kept like, oh, shoot,
he kept walking forward. That was actually really good. That was one of the few times, like Randy was saying, you never felt like Bruce was ever in any danger. But at that time, you really felt like, oh, shit.
Yeah, it's tropey. It's tropey as well. We probably could have mentioned it as a trope, but it just reminds me of like a sub boss in an old 8-bit video game. Like it's just slightly harder than everybody else, and you got to do shoot him 3 times and he dies.
Yep,
dodge his heart attack.
That actor's name, by the way, is Tiny Ron.
All right.
Yeah, he was a tiny guy, wasn't he?
let's see. Oh, and then Oh, here's another one. Hey, I know a great place to hide out. How about an old church all by itself, full of holes and out in plain view with a huge viewing holes all over it? That's a perfect place to hide.
Yeah, then have the bartender bring out, you know, like a big loaf of bread every day.
Yeah, no one will notice in that town of gangsters.
Yeah,
that's one of those things where it's like we need to put some exposition in a completely different place, and we're gonna have a beautiful woman there. So let's build a church, and we're gonna make it really nice to photograph. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it made no sense whatsoever.
Nope.
Yeah.
But like it's one of those things where you trade good film for good entertainment.
And sense, sure, why not? Speaking of things that make good sense, we got an email from a listener named William. William says, boogity, boogity, boogity.
Amen.
He says, hey, guys, on the Smokey and the Bandit episode, you guys mentioned the minister saying boogity, boogity, boogity during his prayer. I don't think that was what it was from, but anyway.
Yeah, it was.
Was it?
It was, yeah.
Okay. While it is in Smokey and the Bandit, more than likely he was referring to NASCAR Hall of Famer Darrell Waltrip. Waltrip has been saying boogity, boogity, boogity for years. Thanks. Love the show, William.
Nope. Sorry. Was referring to an actual preacher.
A guy that said boogity, boogity.
Yeah. The actual preacher is named...
The boogity preacher.
Pastor
knows this.
Joe Nelms. Pastor Joe Nelms.
Yeah.
Let's see. Where?
And he did a famous prayer before a NASCAR race that was caught and replayed by WGN. And then, of course, our good friend, the Shimoyoho Gregory brothers, decided to take it to town and made an awesome auto-tune of that prayer.
It was originally made famous by these guys. That guy. He was amazing. That's it for emails. Thank you very much. Send your emails, please. We may read them on the show. Filmsack@gmail.com. Scott Fletcher has a couple of quotes. Let's play those. These are from the film that we just watched, Last Man Standing. Here's the first one.
You know something, amigo? I just spotted a chink in your armor. When you go down, it's going to be over a skirt.
A skirt.
Skirt.
Yeah, that was from Sheriff Do Nothing. He had, what? Oh, something about hiring smarter guys.
You tell Mr. Doyle, if he'd hired smarter guys, none of this would have happened.
Damn straight. Thank you, Scott Fletcher, for that reminder. And then finally... this one.
I was born without a conscience.
Now, he's not even quoting the film. He's just talking about himself. Scott Fletcher, thank you so much for your fine quotes. Our next film, Lethal Weapon 2. Well,
what?
Maybe.
Maybe.
It'll be a little interesting what we're going to do with that, but we'll save the surprise until the episode. You'll see what's going on there. But Lethal Weapon 2, starring Mel Gibson and dude what was with him.
Yeah. And it shouldn't be, and we should be getting pretty close to Christmas too. So,
oh yeah, we will be, won't we? Hold on, let's do the math.
So, right, if we don't skip any weeks, episode 100 will be coming out the Friday before Christmas.
That is what we. I think that's what we want.
Yeah,
exactly.
So, what is it? Yeah, you're right. So this
the Friday after Christmas. No, I'm sorry. That's not true. The Last Action Hero, the episode 100, would be the 16th. And then the 23rd, which is the Friday before Christmas, will be The Gods Must Be Crazy 2, which is a very, very good Christmas film for film set.
Indeed. So stay tuned for that. Can't wait for that. In the meantime, check out the website, filmsack.com. Email us at filmsack@gmail.com. We are on Twitter at filmsack. And by the way, also a filmsack dedicated brand page on Google+. If you're into the Google+, you can find it just by simply searching for FilmSack. Put us in your circles and enjoy what goodness comes out of there. Leave us a review on iTunes too. We like that. That's going to do it for us. For me, for Brian, and for Randy.
That's me.
We'll see you next week.
Next week.
That's what you got?
Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.